I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE in the week of the second anniversary of Israel invoking the Hannibal Doctrine on October the 7th. Today there will be mass arrests of those demonstrating against their NATO governments, which have armed the ensuing Israeli genocide, the worst militarized Holocaust of this century. NATO's totalitarian governments have also been exposed. Already in Britain, a key co-belligerent in the genocide, just wearing T-shirts are punishable by up to 14 years in prison, with its unpopular Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer claiming it's un-British to use free speech to demonstrate against Israel. In the US, there have been revelations in the suspected Israel-involved assassination of Turning Point USA founder Charlie Kirk. Since his inauguration, Donald Trump has vacillated between ending the horror, then beginning the starvation of Gaza, then bombing Iran, then aiding the Israeli bombing of Syria, Qatar, Tunisia, Yemen, Lebanon, and Iraq. In the last 2 years, the USA has perhaps sent over $31 billion and counting to fund Israeli destruction across the Middle East. And despite the Trump plan for a Tony Blair Trump-run Gaza, the shadow of full-scale war on Iran now hangs over this region. Mika Almog is the granddaughter of the late Shimon Peres, who was Israel's president, prime minister, foreign and defense minister. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1994 with Arafat and Rabin for the ill-fated Oslo Accords. Mika's own mission is to create peace in the Middle East, and she is the content director of It's Time, a coalition of over 60 peace organizations in Israel. She joins me now from Tel Aviv. Mika, thank you so much for coming on Going Underground. Over here in Dubai, the newspapers talk about the second anniversary of October 7th with big full pages. 2 years on, Gazans endure loss, grief after a destructive military campaign. Israel faces genocide charges as well as global isolation. Just tell me about the It's Time coalition and how it's tried to end the slaughter.
First of all, thank you for having me. The It's Time coalition is an unprecedented collaboration of 60 Israeli peace organizations that have come together to pool not only our resources, but our ideology and our initiatives in order to create a greater voice for the Israeli peace camp. We are not a new organization. We are a mechanism for enabling and encouraging existing Israeli civil society and peace organizations to work together in order to bring the voice of the Israeli peace camp to a much wider audience. And our theory of change says that Israel's peace camp is significantly bigger, wider, and more diverse than it appears to be. When I say appears to be, I refer both to its representation or more often lack thereof in the media, but also to the perception of people who are clearly part of this camp, their perception of themselves. And the work that we've done so far in the year and a half or so that we've been in existence has proven that if we create this mechanism that enables the 60 organizations to present the public in Israel with platforms that are as wide, diverse, and large as the public itself, they do respond. So that is the work that we have been doing and are doing. We've done a lot of big events. The greatest one was the People's Peace Summit that took place on May 8th and 9th in Jerusalem. We had over 8,000 people come. We had messages from President Macron, from Abu Mazen, from the EU, from many Israeli politicians, and most importantly, from the Israeli public, as is represented and reflected in the work of these 60 civil society and peace organizations.
Yeah, clearly, if the media aren't reporting it and minimizing that opposition, then they're arguably aiding anti-Semitism in other countries, because they'll all think that Israel supports Netanyahu. But it has to be said, as recently as 3rd of June, Haaretz analyzed opinions of Jewish Israelis and said 82% supported forced expulsion of all Palestinian Christians and Muslims from Gaza. Yeah. And about half of them said that the IDF should just kill everyone in Gaza. Yeah. What is the truth then? Because you're saying, no, there are Jewish Israelis, as well as Palestinian Arabs and Israeli Arabs, who want the killing to stop.
Far more than appears to be. And I think that in order to properly answer that question, we have to realize that Israeli society in this war is influenced not only by the trauma of October 7th, but also by the trauma of the assassination of Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin and the attack of October 7th, we just mentioned, and the assassination of Rabin, we will mention its 30th memorial coming up this November 4th. And I mentioned the two because what has happened in Israeli society over the span of these 30 years was that the possibility, the concept, the very discussion of peace was gradually and very effectively removed from the table and then turned into something that was at first or at best laughable and at worst and at present something that could even be considered treacherous. Okay, so when we come to gauge a public's opinion, I ask you, how can we gauge a public's opinion on an issue that has not been in discussion for decades? And what has happened during these decades is that, meanwhile, Israelis have repeatedly heard about other things. We have repeatedly heard that our lives are in danger, but we can control that through violence. Okay, we've had many rounds of wars and fighting before October 7th, and we have repeatedly been presented by ideas of force, of violence, of managing the conflict. And even now, recently, this idea of total victory is very easily dismissible. And I'll tell you what my first reason for dismissing total victory is. And that is that the concept of total victory is remarkably childish, okay? Because nothing in life is total. The only thing that is ever total is death, and that's the only thing that we're being offered now. But if you look at Israeli society, it's not even anymore about explaining things or clarifying arguments. It's just the number of times that you hear the idea of total victory versus the number of times that you hear the words peace process, the words political solutions, true and just solution to the Israeli conflict. So the work that we're doing now is actually bringing us back. I'll tell you a personal story because I just turned 50, okay? So I was 20 years old when Rabin was assassinated. And in the background of my childhood and my adolescence, there was a peace process. You were for it, you were against it. Sometimes it was doing better, sometimes it failed, but it was there as a Northern Star. It was there as the prism through which we examined Israel. The essence of who we are is that we are a peace-seeking nation. That's what we aspire to be. And then the questions are about who and, you know, with whom and under whose leadership and when and under what conditions. And none of these are, of course, minor questions or minor points of discussion. But this was there as an essential part of Israeli identity. And what has happened over these three decades since this political assassination, and just to remind any viewers who may not remember, Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated at the end of one of the biggest peace rallies ever held in Israel, in Tel Aviv, by right-wing extremists who wanted to end the Oslo Accords that Rabin was involved with, alongside, as you mentioned, my grandfather as well. Okay? And so I now have three children, the eldest of whom is 20 years old, who grew up in an Israel that did not have the aspiration to peace as its backdrop, okay? That more and more removed from our agenda the idea of that being what we aspire to. So now, when we try to gauge Israeli public opinion, I don't think we can gauge public opinion. I think we can gauge, at best, public sentiment. And public sentiment is a very dangerous thing to gauge and call it an opinion, because
well,
public sentiment is very
different. They're terrifying statistics. And, you know, I know you've said, I'm not afraid of you, we are not afraid of you, to Netanyahu. Right. I mean, you're essentially saying that the Israeli Jews have been held hostage by these forces within Israeli society, and they seem to be winning.
I I think that the greatest tragedy in the region is the fact that both the Israeli people and the Palestinian people are being held hostage by extremists. And therefore, what we're doing with It's Time is working with the people themselves, working with civil society, working in the field, giving them the opportunity to express ideas that have been all but banned from Israeli discussion and still are. And yes, of course, Israeli media has a role in that as well, in the question of how much Israelis know about other possibilities they know about what's happening in Gaza.
Yeah, but on that, you have Haaretz newspaper, you have voices in your press that NATO countries supplying the weaponry to Netanyahu don't have, arguably. So actually, there's more in the media there showing dissent than there is in London, Berlin, Brussels, and in the United States, arguably.
There is no doubt whatsoever that part of what is happening in Israel is related, in addition to a global trend towards autocracy, and we're well aware of that. But I can tell you that in Israel, and you know, this is, I think, maybe in some ways also true for liberal publics under attack in other places, okay? I think that part of the challenge that we're facing as a peace and life-loving democratic liberal public in Israel is that we continue to be reactionary. And whereas we do have Haaretz magazine, I think that our media and our public in general is forever caught in reacting to what the most extreme government in the history of Israel is doing. And so this creates in Israel, and again, this is a process that's been going on for decades and has created within Israel a mentality of a desert mentality, so that we have a public in Israel that, despite having our own land and our own nation, we still have this idea that we are in the desert. And within that desert, if all you've ever known is sand, then all you can ever be is either for sand or against sand. And even within this discussion, when we have this discussion in Haaretz magazine and other outlets, and we're still, you know, very much fighting and practicing for our freedom of speech and our freedom of expression, but we're still playing within the mechanism. Okay, we still hold the desert mentality in which all we discuss is sand. And, you know, we have nuances. We have opinions about, you know, soft sand and wet sand and kinetic sand. But none of us, it doesn't even occur to us to raise the possibility of grass, to raise the possibility of something else.
Miguel, just stop you there. More from the granddaughter of the late Israeli President Shimon Peres and the content director of It's Time after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the granddaughter of the late Israeli President Shimon Peres and content director of It's Time, Mika Almog. Mika, you were talking about the failure of imagination across the Middle East, perhaps, and not only in Israel at the end of part one. I have to ask you about this peace plan, really, because Tony Blair said he loved your late grandfather deeply. And what did you make when Trump named him as a future leader of Gaza? It was, of course, immediately rejected by all Palestinians who have been debating it in Egypt this week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know him.
I do not know Tony Blair. I knew my grandfather, okay? I did not know Tony Blair.
But you can see what you were talking about, sand. You were talking about sand and grass at the end of part one. And obviously, within the Middle East, he's associated with the killing, wounding, or displacing of tens of millions in the Iraq War. So it's kind of piled on to what we've been seeing of 2 years of this genocide. What was your reaction when you heard that Blair would have any role in any possible future for Gaza?
I have to tell you, you know, we could go into the specifics of this, but where we stand right now and where we come from as It's Time and our part in this ecosystem, I think that the again, part of what I was saying before is that every time we go in and we discuss the latest position that's been put out or the latest person that's been put in the position to hold it, the first thing that needs to happen here is that we need to agree on change. And I can tell you that over the past 2 years, there have been many opportunities to end this war. And the first thing that needs to happen is for it to end. And the first thing that we need to do is enter a plan. And I think that we are endlessly good at saying what not to do, and we're not as good at saying what we can do. Tony Blair and pretty much anyone else, any other name that you can bring up in connection to these processes is going to have baggage. Anyone who has experience has baggage. Anyone who has been involved in the Middle East has gotten dirty because it's muddy and it's complicated. And so I think that especially in this world that is so liable and constantly changing, and there's such an endless possibility of things that could change in 10 minutes, from the moment that we're speaking, I think that the most important thing that we need to do right now is accept the fact that we need to accept any help that we can get, okay?
You know more about it than all those Israelis that want the extermination of all the people in Gaza? I'm sure you have lots of arguments in Tel Aviv, clearly. And how is it you found out? Because, I mean, a lot of people around the world found out through social media, TikTok, which has just been taken over, of course. What do you say to Israeli Jews who differ from your opinion and say, no, we want the greater Israel that Netanyahu has already signaled, and the extermination of all Palestinians, and, as I said, that Haaretz poll, the forced expulsion of all Palestinians, Christians and Muslims, from Gaza? What do you say to them?
I say to them that 2 years into this horrendous war, with so much death, destruction, and loss that is going to haunt us for many, many, many generations, it is still clear. And even in this era where the truth itself is under attack, there are still certain things that cannot be argued with. There are certain facts. And the facts are that between the river and the sea, there are two people, and neither one is going to give up on their dream of a homeland and of full self-determination. And so, one of the things that have happened is that we have been fed these messianic fantasies from extremists on both sides for so long that there's a great public that would like to believe that this is true. But the facts on the ground prove that it's not. We are not going anywhere. Palestinians are not going anywhere. And so we have, it has been, October 7th has proven beyond any of a shadow of a doubt that the conflict cannot be managed. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict can either be solved or you can find yourself in the thick of it forever, forever losing children and women and people and spilling blood endlessly. And so I think that
they don't get to see the images of depravity from Gaza that have been transmitted over the past 2 years. They probably don't believe what you're saying anyway.
This is part of the work that we're doing. And by the way, the show is called Going Underground, and you have indeed on this episode gone underground, because a lot of what is happening on the ground in the public. And I remind you that these times are dynamic, not only in the sense of what will happen with the war, but also in the sense of when Israel will go to elections and the political change that must happen here. And so all of these things are part of that effort. And what is happening on the ground, in the same way that you sense that Israelis are not exposed, I am telling you that there are many Israelis who have found alternative ways to become exposed, that more and more Israelis are realizing that they belong to this peace camp, not because they are naive or optimistic or detached from what's happening on the ground, not because, we hold some sort of of dream because we are realists. We are realists. And the past 2 years have proven beyond any shadow of the doubt that other solutions will only lead us to more and more death. And we have had enough death. And this message is coming across and becoming more and more clear in Israel. And I can tell you that we've been doing this work for a year and a half. Okay. We had our first big gathering in July. We had, you know, three Israeli politicians come on our stage. When we had our next, the People's Peace Summit in May, we had six Israeli politicians come on our stage. A lot of expressions that we were using from day one to describe what is happening in Israel, to describe what is happening in Gaza, were considered off the charts, and now they are being discussed in the mainstream. So the main thing, and in these upcoming elections, for the first time in many, many rounds of elections, the question of solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict will be in the center.
Okay, but Netanyahu has a way of always bouncing back, and you won't be having elections if there's a war on Iran. I mean, here in the UAE, which signed the Abraham Accords, the talk has been UAE says Israel's West Bank plans are a red line, referring to the right-wing coalition's plans to annex the entire West Bank. I know Trump has publicly said that he would not accept Netanyahu taking over the entire West Bank. What happens to your country if the war begins on Iran? There won't be elections.
I have no doubt whatsoever that Netanyahu will do absolutely anything. As I said in the video that you quoted, which is a video from 6 years ago, okay, that went viral 6 years ago, and which I opened by saying, Bibi Netanyahu, I am not afraid of you. And many of the things that I said on that video, including that Netanyahu will stop at nothing and stoop to anything in order to stay in power, have sadly proven themselves to be true. So I have no doubt that within his abilities, Netanyahu, as he has done countless times before, will try to break apart this deal and continue the war.
You know what's terrifying, though, Mika? What's terrifying about
that? Palestinians.
What's terrifying about you saying that he always does bounce back is that Israel has nuclear weapons.
I didn't say that he bounced back. I didn't say that he always bounces back. I said that he will stop at nothing and stoop to anything.
Okay, stop at nothing is what we're worried about.
But Rachif, I must go back to the point I was making before. Here we are again, okay, discussing him. What is he capable of? Everything. That's no longer a question. What is Bibi Netanyahu capable of doing in order to survive, to secure,
not just him,
secure
an entire
his own survival,
government.
His own survival, both politically and personally, okay, to stay in power and out of jail? What will he do in order to achieve that? Absolutely everything. So the question that it's time the peace coalition and that the activists and the active public in Israel are now dealing with is what will we do? There is no doubt that Netanyahu has to be pushed into a corner in order to end this war. And God willing, by the time this interview is aired, we will be in that place where a ceasefire has been announced and the hostages are on their way home, etc. I have no doubt that he will try to hurt that deal, and I have no doubt that there will be attempts to prevent free and full and fair elections in Israel. And I can tell you that in addition to our initiative, there are many organizations in Israel already
working for the wider region,
on securing the validity of the upcoming
elections. For the wider region, so, when you say stop at nothing, what is terrifying about that is, and your grandfather was the father of Israel's nuclear weapons program, how can we trust Netanyahu not to deploy nuclear weapons?
This is a leader who cannot be trusted with anything, okay? And therefore, we have to stop this war in whatever means possible. And so, you know, what we do is part of a greater ecosystem of ending the war and changing our future. So the part that I represent is civil society and everyday people who can hit the streets, who can do digital work, who can convene and realize that our numbers are greater, our power is greater than it appears to be. And this is indeed underground, but it is cooking, it is happening, and it will emerge in full force. And I can tell you that already some of these civil organizations have proven themselves after October 7th in helping civilians who were hurt in this attack. This is an incredible civilian network of activity serious education during the struggle against the attempt to gut our democracy.
Okay, we've seen what happens to Jewish organizations in the NATO countries arming the war on Gaza. And they've been clamped down on for opposing the Israeli government. You said you were not afraid 6 years ago. You must know about the fact that Jews in Israel are being they're being persecuted already, much less, of course, than the Palestinians. But what do you expect to happen to NGOs and civil disobedience organizations, I suppose, NGOs like yours, in the coming weeks as Netanyahu and his entire government, it's not just him, there's a whole cadre, a whole class there, as they oppose what you're doing, what they're going to do to you?
I don't busy myself with the question of what they will do. I busy myself with the question of what I will do. And this, I think, is a big part of the shift that we're trying to achieve. And one of the reasons I mentioned at the beginning of the things I said that it's time is an unprecedented coalition of 60 organizations. And this is what the peace camp in Israel is currently doing, is coming together. Because only by working together for a common cause can we win this fight. And can we sustain our security and build a different future for Israel, which I strongly believe is possible, and it's not too late. But I don't busy myself asking what they will do to me. I busy myself asking, what can I do in order to save my country? And fortunately, I am not alone. There are more and more people who are doing this, who are out there on the streets, who are fighting not only for an end to the war, but also for a new path to peace, Mika, and to collaboration supported internationally and regionally. And again, this public is significantly wider, and you will be hearing more about it very soon. And
Mika,
so I hope to Mika, no longer Almog, be appropriate for a show called Underground.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by the UK-US-EU armed genocide in Palestine. We'll be back on Monday to hear a former US State Department official under Barack Obama expose NATO mass casualty figures and lies in Zelensky's Ukraine. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.